to Breed and Wraith.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Wood.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The sun goes down and the moon comes up.
Just off the line with Pat McKenna and the good news coming out of the General Assembly and the Senate, and Andy Serling follows up back-to-back NYRA visits. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. I had to get Pat. I would have done it anyway, just off the rally on Monday at Albany, but then that news yesterday that Matt Hegarty and Tom Precious reported on, very positive endorsements from the Senate and General Assembly. So this thing is going to happen. It's going to be a long process, but the downstate future is on the move.
Well, it hasn't happened yet, but it does seem to be going in the right direction, so that's great. I'm sure Pat fills you in. He knows a lot more about it than I do. Sorry I couldn't go to the thing on Monday. I had a fortunate doctor's appointment, but it seems like it went really well.
Well, Naj emceed, so, you know.
Hey, Naj did a killer job.
Yeah, big time. I know, right?
Really did a great job. A lot of people, a lot of hard work by a lot of people making those things happen. A lot of people not named me. But yeah, not great. And I think that there's been a more than a good job, but a very effective job in making sure people understood the importance of Belmont, not just to New York racing, but to racing in general. And you know, I mean, so much of our racing goes through Belmont Park. And I don't think a lot of people understand necessarily, and there's no reason they should, that without a vibrant Belmont and without Belmont itself, there's no Saratoga. And without New York racing, there's really no racing, period.
Yep.
I think it's something that the industry has probably not done as good a job of understanding as they probably should have, but it is the most important cog in racing in the country. That's not to diminish the importance of other racetracks, but it is where a great deal of important races are run. and the industry depends on it. We depend on a lot of different factors, but New York racing is the most important, and it's not just America, it's everywhere. And the ecosystem needs a vibrant Belmont, and it hasn't been, nothing's been done to it basically for 60 years. So I think it's a great step in a positive direction.
No, I agreed, and the reality is that, you know, the thing is, as much as we love it, and people are always surprised when they say, "Oh, what's your favorite? You know, what's your favorite track?" And when I say Belmont, you know, is where I enjoy going most, they're like, "Oh my God, you live by Saratoga?" Yes, but Belmont, there's an atmosphere at Belmont that, for whatever reason, the history, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like having a beautiful house and only living in one room of it.
That's a great way to position it, Andy, because it's just a behemoth.
It's too big.
Exactly.
It was built at a time when, you know, there were 25,000 to 30,000 people going to the track on a daily basis.
Yep.
And that's something that continued for a good 15-20 years, but it changed substantially, and obviously by, you know, things really changed with simulcasting around the country in the mid-90s. And then, you know, before that even, we put our races on TV every day. I guess it was right around the same time, very similar, 95.
Yeah.
And so it sort of dampened the impetus to have to go to the racetrack. You could play from home. And, of course, because in this industry we're always a little slow to pick up on things, we didn't pick up on the concept of virtual attendance, maybe even not till now, or now at all.
Yeah.
You know, there's this perception that because the crowds dwindled at racetracks, there wasn't an interest in horse racing, when in fact there's more eyes on the product on a daily basis than there ever were.
Yep. It's so funny.
You and I have talked about it for years, but just as you and I have talked about it, you know, you have to remember we're in the bubble.
Well,
and even the bubble, there's a lot of people that fail to understand that, you know, but there's a lot of, you know, this whole constant drumming of we have to get new, younger fans. This is something, and I think back to my friend Harvey Pack, who used to laugh at me about it and say, "Oh, they've been saying that since I was young," which was a long time ago for Harvey. And it's, you know, yeah, you're going to get some younger people to go, they'll come to Saratoga, and maybe they'll come to Keene a little bit. And maybe Del Mar, I don't really know. I've never been there during the summer. But it's not a young person's game. And, I mean, on the other hand, there's a misconception, as there are many, that because there's marketing done towards younger people, and that's not our demographic, and we don't understand that. It's complicated. So I don't understand marketing, and I'm not going to sit around telling people I understand it. But I guess I understand why they try to appeal to a different group. But I think I have different ideas about how we might make better or more fans. I think the idea is to make better fans, introducing people to it. But I don't know how I got in this direction. But as an industry, I don't know. We try sometimes.
No, the exact elements that you're just touching on, I hit on that on Sunday during a portion of the NHC coverage, and you know, I discussed the virtual attendance, and you know, the fact that if you divide the handle by, you know, the average you know, per person, people would realize that there's 30, 40, 50,000 people that never could have ever gotten to Belmont to walk through the gates, they're attending, you know, every time there's a race day at Belmont. It's just so tiresome. I was going to actually.
Oh, it's only tiresome if you allow it to be tiresome.
Well, I don't know.
But there are narratives, but there are always narratives. It's just in our fishbowl, we sense the narratives a little bit. We take them a little more personally. But there are always incorrect narratives. We just notice the incorrect narratives in this because we understand it better than we understand most things. But the world is full of incorrect narratives. And I'm not just saying right side or left side. It's just, you know, misconceptions. People, you know, I mean, we can sit around at heart because politically we're on the left. But I watch some of the nonsense that was spewed by people on the left side about this Belmont project. And they don't come out and just say, we're against it because we're anti-gambling, right? We're siding with PETA. They come up with a whole bunch of BS, complete lies, just lies.
Yep.
And you see, and that's the situation where I see our side, you know, our side politically doing the exact same thing that we criticize the other side for doing. So don't delude yourself into thinking that there isn't BS on both sides, you know?
Yep.
It's just that a lot of times the BS doesn't really bother us quite as much, right? But when you see it in this, and I see somebody like the woman who's my local assembly person, and I see just blatant inaccuracies that she's spewing, I don't have a problem with somebody that has a different viewpoint than I do at all. In fact, I appreciate a different viewpoint than I do. I can learn from a different viewpoint I do. But when we're intimately knowledgeable about the racing industry and what's going on here, and we see something that's just patently untrue, it's frustrating, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's, so it's going to frustrate us so much more in this because, A, we know, and B, we care, right?
Yeah.
We actually care.
Exactly.
And there aren't that many things. You can sort of read things. There are things that matter to you, but there's a difference between mattering and caring, I think. And especially a passionate caring as we have for racing. And I, like I said, I don't have a problem with opposition. There should always be opposition. Healthy, honest opposition. Everything should have opposition. But it should be honest opposition. And the biggest problem these days in general, and we've seen it in this situation, is dishonest opposition.
Right. Right.
So, you know, but listen, we so long ago, and one of the things, you know, there's a lot of things I've learned from Pat McKenna, who's incredibly knowledgeable about politics. People don't understand what Pat has brought and brings to the table on a daily basis. And it's things he's explained to me, you know, things that matter and things that don't matter. And you just can't get caught up in the fact that these people are telling lies, you know, that's what they're going to do. And to fight, I can't believe they're lying, right? Believe it. They're
going to
do it and deal with it.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let me slip in. We're only going to have about a half session today, but let me...
I have a very important lunch coming up. I don't want to be late for it.
Very good. Fair enough. Let's discuss the race actually at Tampa, which was part of the...
Left.
Yeah. Andy, how can players and observers, how can they distinguish what's the learning curve or suggestion to help them understand what they're seeing in terms of a level of performance when it comes to a horse like Tappet Trice and you know what?
Well, I think you have to remember that my opinions aren't necessarily the be all and end all. They're just my opinions. Having said that, I think that everybody has a confirmation bias in life, right? We all do. You know, we like an author, we read his book. We might not be, or her book, we might not be as critical about it as we would be if it was an author we weren't familiar with, or an author that we didn't particularly like. And I think what happens every year in the Triple Crown, a lot of people get enthusiastic about it, which I love. That's great. But they decide, I like Tappet Trice, for whatever reasons. Valid, invalid. A lot of our reasons for deciding that, you and I even, are super valid reasons sometimes. And they're unable to critically analyze their performances. He won. They come up with things like nobody closes at Tampa, which is crap if you look at the result charts. If you look at the field he was running against with, I don't know how that comes into play, but whatever. And by the way, he still ran very well. It's not that he didn't run badly. He ran badly. What he didn't do was he didn't improve on his prior performance. In fact, he arguably took a step back. It was a slower race based on speed figures, not substantially. On the other hand, why was it slower? I mean, was it a slower pace? I don't think the pace was particularly slow. He's a horse that, because of his running style, is going to be better in elongated one-turn races, right? Because the pace is rated to be faster. So he races a fast race to go into. He has a problem. Everybody's so concentrated, he can't get out of the gate. He can get out of the gate. He can't get into stride out of the gate. He only broke about a half length behind the field. What he then did is he took an enormous amount of time to get into stride. So by the time he sort of got into stride, the field was 5-6 lengths ahead of him. I mean, that's part of his running style, and that's, you know, it's kind of why people have this misconception about Zenyatta and that Breeders' Cup Classic. She's slow. She takes a while to get going. That's who she is. So I'm not sure. I struggle with this. I still struggle with this. Is it the horse really putting themselves at a disadvantage, or is that really the way they run? You know what I mean? They don't do any running early, so of course he's running late because he was just plodding along early. And that's not a criticism of him. He just senses his energy in a different way. Having said that, it wasn't a particularly electrifying performance. You could say, well, what did you want him to do, win by 10 lengths? I don't know. Did you look at him? Do you know he was running against him? Yeah, I could have seen him winning by 6. I don't think that would have been that unreasonable. And I don't think there was anything about the performance on Saturday that says this horse took another step forward on the Triple Crown trail. I don't think he took a significant step back. He probably took a little bit of a step back, but got one more race till the Kentucky Derby. He needs to keep taking steps forward because right now he's not fast enough to win. And yes, last year's Kentucky Derby was run in a manner that would have been conducive to his running style. Between last year and 9 years earlier when Orb won, was Orb 13 or 14? Maybe he was 14. I don't know, somewhere in there. It was 8 years. Has there been another meltdown? Do we expect to be getting a strong pace? Do we have a strong feeling there's going to be a lot of pace now that Arabian Nights out of the race?
Now, last year, and, I guess. I mean, last year would be.
I'm saying last year in 2014.
Yeah.
There haven't been a lot of meltdowns. So for him to be counting on a meltdown, well, that's certainly not a likely event in his corner, right? And so I don't think we saw anything on Saturday that enhances his potential in the Derby. And we may have seen something that gives us pause for his chance. Horse. I won't be surprised if he ends up being even a better horse as the year goes on. But I don't think, based on what we saw Saturday, you're supposed to be more enthusiastic about his chances to win the Derby. And possibly you're supposed to be a little bit less, which is not to say, I'm not trying to criticize him, I'm not trying to attack him, but compare him to Todd's other horse, Forte. And I'll be nice and call him Forte. My father's dead, he can't roll around in his grave as far as I know. Oh, he might be. I'll go there and check when I get to Saratoga next time. Everything he does better than this horse. There's no comparison between these two horses. Forte is faster. He's more agile. He puts himself in position. Everything about Forte is better than this horse. Everything. Now, I would take 3-1 on Forte to win the Kentucky Derby, which he was in that last pool, right now, because even with a win in his prep, in all likelihood, it'll be 2-1 or 5-2, right? So where's the value in that? But having said that, this horse, where did he close? 8-1? I don't know. Forte seems about three or four times more likely to win the Derby than this horse. Doesn't he?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's my problem isn't that I think he's the fat horse, because I don't, and he's a really good horse. You know, if somebody said, if you make a list of your 10 horses in the Derby, of course he would be on it. But that's only because I don't really know who the others are at this point. I wasn't overly impressed with what I saw in California. I think Private Moves a really nice horse. I don't know if he's a mile and a quarter horse. People talk about Skinner. I think if you take Skinner's performance apart, you'll realize he's got about an eighth of a mile move. People say, oh, he's been better and more distance. Really? Did he really finish in the last 16th to an eighth of a mile? I don't think he did. I think those are really nice horses, but I didn't think any of them screamed out, I'm going to win the Derby. On the other hand, I'm not sure that I'm better than Tappish Rice at this point. They're faster, right? The thing that people like about Tappish Rice is this big, slow thing that, you know, he comes running and he's going to like a mile and a quarter. And that's absolutely true. He is going to like a mile and a quarter more probably than some of these horses, but we like it more enough. Or enough more. I don't know. I didn't get any indication from Saturday that he's a likely Derby winner and more likely than he was going. In fact, I think less likely because there are reasons to believe, based on his last race at Gulfstream, that he could have a demonstrably strong performance and could make him one of the top two or three Derby contenders. We did not see that on Saturday.
I agree. And, you know, these are all works in progress. I had Sid earlier, and we talked about Go Rocket Ride, that second-time starter out of that San Felipe. I think, particularly when it comes to those horses from the San Felipe with Skinner and Sheriffs and Go Rocket Ride with Mandela, you know, you sort of acquiesce to their, you know, to their horsemanship and the concept that they, if they're running them in this spot, they have a longer term goal in mind, and that they're, you know, that they're using those. Right, that's right. There's no, not at all. You look at that horse, the horse of Mandela's, was it Magical? Not Magical Kingdom. The kingdom horse.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, that he, you know, there was. Yeah, that's the. You know, they start this season at this time of year, the first third of the year, but. The horse is going to dictate. They're not going to force them into a, you know, round hole.
Right. On the other hand, I imagine somewhere Richard Mandela would like to win the Derby. I don't think he's losing sleep over it. But, you know, who doesn't want to win the Derby, you know? Why wouldn't you want to win the Derby? But as you say, I don't think he's forcing a square peg to a round hole, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. You know, we'll see. I don't. It'll be nice. It's nice to see other people in California. Well, I mean, there won't be any Bob Baffert horses in the Derby, but they'll be in the Preakness and Belmont. And it is interesting. David Aragona tweeted how, and I wasn't saying it, picking on Bob Baffert in any way. It just shows how quickly people's fortunes can change, right? He seemed to have a herd of horses, and I don't care if there were different trainers. They're essentially Baffert horses. And a herd of horses not too long ago, and now it's reincarnate, and there's one other potential horse, right?
Yeah.
Like
So do I.
Yeah, I thought he ran better. You know, it's funny. One of the points I made was we're not hearing anybody talk about the Rebel, right? Because the favorites didn't win and didn't run that well, right? Verifying and whatever. We're not hearing any talk about those Rebel horses. Does anybody actually think that Tavish Rice ran better than the first three finishers in the Rebel? And, like, I don't like that plotting Asmussen horse that ran second in the Rebel either. He's got a look-at-it-Lee type look, right?
Red Rob,
you know,
won.
He's better than that horse last year, like Barber Road, who, by the way, went to Lee with Raven the other day, which is pretty entertaining. You know, he's not good, but he's a plotter, too. Like Tavish Rice, he ran an actually faster figure. I got a fast pace to close that. I'm not a huge fan, but I don't think anybody's talking about it that seriously as a Derby horse. Certainly not as much as Tavish Rice, right? The horse that I know that I read some things that some people said that the winner of the Rebel wasn't training that well. Or there were some training things. I read something or somebody told me. I don't follow that stuff that much, but he certainly looked very good. And I thought Reincarnate ran extremely well there.
Yes, no doubt about it.
I mean, if somebody put a gun to my head and said to me, you have to bet $50 on a horse, whatever, you know, they gave me some sort of realistic odds in the Derby, I'd bet Reincarnate right now. I'd probably lose, but I'd bet him.
I brought that up as part of the follow-up to the future wager.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Forte is the likeliest winner, but that doesn't mean I would bet on him. I certainly wouldn't have bet him at 3-1. I just don't see how you're going to get any value with that price. I don't understand. You know, there's a lot. Unfortunately, a lot can go wrong between now and the Derby, and I hope nothing goes wrong with him. I'm a fan. I like that horse.
Well, and yeah, it's always good when you've got.
My feeling of Tavish Rice in a nutshell is there was nothing to get excited about Saturday, and reason to be a little bit at least circumspect. That's all.
Andy?
It's been incredibly great spending this time with you.
Time well spent. No, that's good. That was good. I just wanted to catch up with you. Andy Serling, everybody, there you go. A little bit of I wanted him to talk about this because the Tavish Rice thing, nobody is saying that this isn't a nice, you know, it's not, he's a nice horse and he's developing, etc. But I mean the you know, the insta read, there's your Derby second choice. Easy. I wasn't sure if Todd was going to be able to join us, and he begged off just now. So he said, can I get a rain check? And of course he can. So we will talk to Todd. Another point. I'm going to get Tim Lawson in here, but let me, I promised, what do we got? We got 2 minutes. Let's do this. We have 2 minutes to the Queen Mother, Chase. And Energeman is your favorite. Willie Mullins, 4-5. You got a 6-5 on Edward Stone, the Allen King. And, of course, until we get to Friday and are able to talk to the long shot lad himself, Kev Humphries, as I reach for Kev's, let's see what Kev has done here thus far this morning. There's been plenty of racing. We didn't get a chance to talk Happy Valley. Dick was traveling himself to Florida, so we couldn't talk to Dick this morning. But I can tell you that, you know, just was sort of watching with one eye. Karis Teton won four more today. Four wins for Karis Teton. It was a fairly formful, seemed like a pretty formful evening at Happy Valley. So we'll catch up with Dick next week. But meanwhile, at Cheltenham, they've run three so far. And let's see what Kev has been able to come up with. Wow. The Langer Dan won the Coral Cup, and unbelievable. That horse caught my eye this morning as I was looking at the preview write-ups, and there's a winner for Kev. Look at that. Kev, that's one of the reasons that I thought that, because Kev put Langer Dan on top. He was 10-1 morning line. He ended up paying 20.60. So, boom, there's a nice hit for the long shot lad. And HMS Seahorse was his other play, who did not get a placement. And then in the Brown Novice, in the Novice Chase second, the Real Whacker, paid $14. This was not one of Kev's. He did not catch a placer in there. And then in the opener, Impair E Pass was another winner, kind of a shortish price, but, you know, it's all right. He acquiesced to the logical, which he does sometimes, paid $6.40, and his longer price did not place. So Kev's got two winners on top so far as we look to the Queen Mother, and it is post time. Let me get ready to give you the call. They're going to go 2 miles, so it's not an interminable event in that regard. Pricing is holding. Edward Stone 6-5, and Nurgerman 4-5. They're starting to line up. It looks like not far, and let's see what Kev liked. As part of this as well, Kev was he's reaching for Captain Guinness and Fonabule Sivola, the 1 and 5, who are 20 and 50-1 on the line. Captain Guinness currently 14-1. You still have time if you want to punch. And Fonabule Sivola is 69-1, but Captain Guinness, his top pick for Henri de Bromède with Rachel Blackmore aboard, 13-1. So he's bypassing the short price logicals here in the Queen Mother. All right, and they're still trying to form a line. I do see the, isn't that the, it looks like the, what, the Wertheimer colors. I think we're just about ready, and here we go.
Now racing then for the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase. They have 13 fences to jump. They begin with 4 in a row, and there's 5 in a row battling for the lead here. Fence number 1 on the right, Editor Dujit. Red colors was just in front. The blue jacket, Energumene, running in second place. White colors of Nube Negra is next. They're already at number 2. Behind these, Extreme Outside is Fumabil Sivola, red and white stripes on a black jacket. Behind those, Grenadine in pink, the beige color. Captain Guinness goes the shortest way around, hugs the inside. Edward Stone, the second favorite, is alongside. They're very well bunched. It's only about 4 lengths between them as they come to fence number 3. And Niall Houlihan on Eddie de Nugent. Just in front and down is Fumable Sivilla, number five. Fumable Sivilla is a faller at fence number three. The others have cleared the fourth. Fumable Sivilla is continuing and jumping behind the others. Charlie Deutsch is up on his feet. The other six then make their way to fence five. Eddie de Nugent, the red jacket, leads. Paul Townend in blue. Energumene travels very strongly the early part of the race. He's a half length behind. Running in second place. Behind those, pink jacket, is Grenadine and Harry Cobden wide out. Harry Skelton, Nube Negra, red stripe on a white jacket. Beige and blue for Rachel Blackmore against the rails on Captain Guinness. And Tom Cannon, Edward Stone, dark blue jacket, lighter blue sleeves, is the fractional back marker of the sextet, which remain as they come on towards fence number six. Edward Stone a little slower than maybe some of the others. Energumene jumping through to join. Eddie de Nugent in front. And Nube Negra wide has come up with him as well. Here's the water. It's the seventh. Grenadine and Captain Guinness are in fourth and fifth positions, two lengths behind those. Edward Stone, the first of the open ditches, coming up in blue. Energumene in red. Eddie de Nugent are the pair that head the champion chase fields. Both over it okay. Captain Guinness in beige jumps through into third place. Nube Negra and Grenadine together. Edward Stone a length off, though, so still they're very tightly bunched as they head up to this next plain fence heading towards the top of the hill. Four more to jump from here. The final open ditch will be the next one. And it's the red of Eddie de Nugent and the blue of last year's winner Energumene who raced together. Final open ditch coming up. Pink colours of Grenadine, the beige of Captain Guinness behind them in third and fourth places. And Grenadine walks through that one. He loses fourth position to Edward Stone. So at the top of the hill, it's all plain fences from here. There are three of them to take. The blue of Energumene travelling strongly around the outside of the red of Eddie de Nugent. Right on their tails is Captain Guinness. And here comes Edward Stone creeping closer. He's up into fourth position. Grenadine and Nube Negra, the next pair. They're coming down now to the third last. Eddie de Nugent and Energumene continue to be together in front. Captain Guinness is behind those. Edward Stone close up in fourth position. And at the third last fence, still very little to choose between Energumene and Eddie de Nugent. But Captain Guinness coming into it. He's only a half length behind. Rachel Blackmore still holding on to him. Grenadine is behind those. Edward Stone is then back in fifth position, 10 lengths off the leaders. They come to the home turn. Energumene in the blue colours with now Captain Guinness moving through into second place, but Paul Townend has the advantage here by a length and a half. Captain Guinness switches to the left as they jump the second last fence and didn't jump it too well in second, Captain Guinness. So it's Energumene who's cantering to victory as he comes to the last. He's up and over safely. Six lengths clear. Captain Guinness in second, Eddie de Nugent in third, Grenadine and Edward Stone just getting over the final fence. Nothing was a match today for Energumene. He's absolutely bolted up in the Pitway Champion Chase with Paul Townend and Energumene the winner. Captain Guinness second. Third will be very close. Grenadine in the pink has got to a tiring editor.
Well, the winner was way too good, but a nice push by Kev for Captain Guinness, 11-1, and what you're going to get here, I think, was just, there's two places available in a fairly short field. So you'll get a place price on Captain Guinness. So a third success for the top pick for the long shot lad, the one and only long shot lad. Kev, he's the best. Let's reach for Tim Lawson. I'm looking forward to this. Tim is the director of racing at Woodbine, and they announced their schedule yesterday. And most notably, I mean, we knew about the situation, of course, with the the revision of the Queen's Plate to the King's Plate, and that, that's kind of a fun story. But the return of the International, that's a not just a good story that, a big race like the International comes back, but it's, it one of the top, particularly late season options, and gets an international type of a cast, and it really feels like this is going to be the you know, the summer, the season, that Woodbine gets 100% fully back to normal after what, you know, what was an extended period of challenge, obviously, from COVID. So excited to catch up, and this will in some ways be our start of the coverage this season for Woodbine. And nice to get a chance to talk to Tim too, and we'll get everything we want, everything we need to know from Tim Lawson, who joins us now. Tim, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Hold on. Let me adjust the audio on you, and there we go. All right, I turned down I turned things down because we were taking the race from Cheltenham. Tim Lawson joins us from Woodbine. And Tim, good news yesterday with the release of the stake schedule and the return of the international.
Yeah, Steve, we're really excited, obviously, about the entire stake schedule. We've got, you know, a good number of marquee days at Woodbine this year, you know, highlighted, of course, by the return of the Kings Plate, the name, of course, not being in place for 70-plus years, and obviously the Woodbine Mile and our Breeders' Cup winning year in races in September, as they always are. But obviously, yesterday with the press release, we're all very excited here to bring back the international. Obviously, run at a new distance this year, bringing it back in October. And this is something that's been on our radar, you know, since we, you know, put it on hold just for a year. But our intention was to bring it back stronger than ever, and champion this race, as it has such a historical significance to our track and to racing in the entire country. So it'll be great.
Well, the international, October 8th, if you're marking calendars and picking out options, and the big weekends, of course, between, you know, Woodbine Mile and King's Plate, international, the time to start planning your trip is your trips are now. It is notable too, I saw that in the announcement, Tim, you know, at Belmont they're obviously going to be celebrating Secretariat the 50th anniversary, and people may forget that it's also important to Woodbine.
It is, and I was reminiscing over that today. You know, although the Secretariat's a romp, I will mind you, in the international back 50 years ago now, was a little before my time. But this was also a big factor in bringing it back and you know, putting it front row center and really celebrating this race, as it is Secretariat's 50th anniversary, and people who were fortunate enough to be around for it really have good memories of him coming up to Woodbine and the Canadian connections that were, of course, Ron Turcotte, Lucien Lauren, and you know, really what that horse, the impact that horse had on the racing world, and it really also put Woodbine on the map, and we're 50 years later, we're just as proud to have hosted him.
Let's touch on the big, you know, the big highlights of the schedule. Run down everything, opening from opening day through to the plate, and of course the whole Queen's Plate to King's Plate thing is sort of I think is bemusing to some degree.
Yeah, it's amusing for sure, and you know, it was inevitable that one day, you know, the name was obviously going to change. And keeping consistent with tradition, we are now the King's Plate, and it's kind of a new chapter in our story and of Canada's most celebrated race. But yeah, you know, opening day is the 22nd of April. Where I'm looking outside right now and hoping some of the snow is going to melt and you know, allow some more favorable track conditions for our horses getting ready. And you never know in the spring. The spring in Canada has a brings a bit of precarious weather, so we're hoping for an easy and easy go the next few weeks, and prepping for opening day. And then we took a bit of a different approach this year with some of our major stakes days. What we wanted to do is was give our fans something to get excited about throughout the entire meet, and really set up a number of marquee days. Of course, as I previously mentioned, the international and the plate and the mile. But we've added one more day, which we're really getting excited about and we're really celebrating, and that's the July 1st weekend, which appears as Canada Day, as it's a bit of a preview into the July 4th celebrations. But you know, we have five graded stakes that day, highlighted by the Highlander Stakes and the Nassau, and that's another big day. We had a similar date to that last year, around the same date, and it was really well received. And it's really just to balance out our stake schedule and to give people a reason to keep tuning into Woodbine and get excited about our product throughout the entire meet. And I'm really looking forward to that. Of course, you know, the plate is back in its spot in August, and you know, there's need I say more? It's a highly anticipated day throughout the racing community. It celebrates the best of Canadian racing. We're very excited about that. And my personal favorite is actually Mile Weekend. We see just such great international talent coming out for that. And you know, Modern Games, you know, taking the prize last year and going on to Breeders' Cup the way it did was something that we were all tremendously proud of. And you know, we've seen year after year some of these great horses show up to Woodbine for our Breeders' Cup winning year in races, and it'll be great. And our major stakes schedule is obviously capped off by the international, and of course it's Philly and Mare counterpart, the EP Taylor, also run out a mile and a quarter. And you know, we see some great international flair for that, and it's going to be an exceptional day as well. And we're really just excited, Steve, to get this meet kicked off.
Well, and as I mentioned, as you were coming on, the return of the international kind of also indicates that all of the challenges that were presented by pandemic are behind Woodbine, and you know, the anguished visits that we had with Jim, where he was more or less, you know, just appealing to the provincial government to let Woodbine operate the way, you know, the American tracks were being allowed to operate. It was so frustrating. You could hear the frustration. It was palpable, and you know, the horsemen were hamstrung. It was really tough. And I don't know if you know, the rest of the horse playing and you know, fan community in the United States realized how, you know, how much more of a struggle it was in Ontario than it was, you know, for us here.
It was, Steve. It was an uphill battle, and you know, it was 2 years of it. You know, ultimately with the delayed start of our meets, I recall, and I think it was 2020 when, you know, I remember at the time when we were very early on in the pandemic, people didn't know, you know, whether this was airborne or through where it was, you know, whether it was through touch. And you know, the immediate reaction was just hold off everything, everything recreational, anything active. You know, we were giggling at the time because, you know, horse racing obviously being an outdoor sport, you know, we couldn't even play golf up here. And obviously our priority at Woodbine was just to ensure that the health and safety of our horses were prioritized, and that we were able to, you know, to get operating again. And you know, no one in the industry likes a winter layoff. Obviously it's months without any income, and for that to prolong until June, I mean, it was a real struggle for everyone, and we appreciate that. And it was hard for us. And, you know, thankfully we got the ball rolling midsummer, and we got there. But I think, you know, hats off to our horse people for the perseverance and you know, dare I say stubbornness, for sticking around and holding out. And, you know, we eventually got to where we needed to be, but it didn't come without its challenges. And I think it's something that really brought people together and appreciated, the determination that people have to keep this industry and it going, and to to help it thrive in years to come.
Well, and you know, and even before pandemic, Tim, I've got to bring up the other rug being pulled out from under everybody, which was the difficulties regarding support for Ontario racing in general. You had to fight to get the, you know, the province to restore, you know, some of the incentives that were involved in the breeding program, some of the underpinnings, and it was really an underhanded attack on breeders in particular and owners the way that came about. And the good news is that that's also behind you, and the Ontario program, you know, revitalized and a big part of the whole schedule.
Yeah, exactly, and like it's been an up and down battle the last, I guess it's been 10, 11 years now since the industry in Ontario was shaken up a bit when they announced the end of the Flats Racetrack program, which of course is a huge lifeline for racetracks everywhere in keeping their purses viable and competitive. You know, we're in a good place right now. Last year, including the Ontario sired and Ontario bred bonuses that we distributed, Woodbine gave out over $70 million in purses. We're really happy, you know, to have met that commitment. You know, we were able to get to only $150,000 under what our actual commitment was. So to be that close to our actual budget and ensure that money was going into the pockets of our horse people, that was really our intention, especially coming out of the pandemic. And I would say, you know, how unknown the last few years have been. As you said, the last decade has been a bit of a fight in this province, and now I'm not going to say that we're completely out of the woods, but we're in a more stable environment now with some clarity as to how our future is in Ontario to support our breeders and our owners and to keep this industry thriving and really putting Ontario on the world map as a leader. So we're really happy with the direction that we see ourselves going in the years to come.
Well, the Woodbine season, you know, just about 4 weeks away, and we'll be looking forward to it. One weekend that hasn't come up yet, but we want to slip in. Yes, you know, Dominion Day, Canada Day, July 1, but the Woodbine Oaks, July 23rd, and we'll watch for that because the Oaks produces your plate favorite more often than not.
it appears to be. We've seen some great Oaks winners move on to do great things. Obviously, most notably Moira last year, and really becoming a bit of a superstar. As she transitions to the international stage, you know, giving it a good run down at Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. But you know, we're seeing a lot of these fillies do great things, and it's creating a great storyline year after year. We've also got the plate trial that weekend, which is you know, another good preview and prep for the plate. But you're not wrong there, Steve. I think most of us year over year get as if not more excited for the Oaks because of the special fillies that we've seen exit that race and go on to do great things. So you hit the nail on the head. That's another great weekend to look forward to.
Tim Lawson, great to connect. Looking forward to a big year at Woodbine. Looking forward to getting up. I've been to 1 mile and haven't been to a plate yet. But that would be ideal. I'd love to come for plate, but I would settle for Oaks or any of them, any of the big weekends. The fall as well, including the International. That's one of those, you know, one of those quote-unquote bucket list races.
For sure. Well, you're welcome anytime, Steve, and of course to all the listeners out there. You know, we love whether you're local or south of the border. You know, we welcome with open arms, and we look forward to celebrating racing in Toronto, racing in Canada with everyone this summer.
Tim Lawson, everybody, Woodbine and the Woodbine Entertainment Group, Mohawk and the whole team, and the season is not far off. Tim, talk soon. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Tim Lawson, there you go. And not too long before we'll be having a chance to play Woodbine. Added always a nice addition to the betting menu. And I just printed out the whole calendar, actually. It's a good calendar of stakes weekends. You know, they do a lot of Sunday. The Sundays are big at Woodbine. And sometimes they have bounced the plate around a couple of times from Sundays and back on a Sunday here and the weekend before Travers. So August 20th, if you're marking here, I'll give you a couple things. If you're marking your calendars, August 20th is plate, and October 8th is International E.P. Taylor Near Arctic, etc. That might be the fun day to go up. The Breeders, the mile and a half turf, is October 1st, the weekend before, and obviously July 1st is always, it's always going to be Dominion Day. The Woodbine Oaks, Sunday, July 23rd. So a lot of it coincides, obviously, runs parallel to Saratoga season. And, you know, if you're going to be on the road this summer, you combine it, all right? And we'll be checking in regularly on Woodbine. Not enough time, really. Popo, I'll save Popo because at this point it's too short. Let's get a play. It's even too short for Seth because we've only got 3-4 minutes. But let's see if I can raise Seth and get a play for him today. Because why not? I talked to Seth. Sunday? Didn't I? I talked to him Sunday from Vegas. Yeah, I did before. That's right. I was down, got down to the, was down in the event center, before the action got started. Just a couple of minutes, to get a push or two from Seth Merrow. Good morning.
Yeah, that's going to be my, I'm going to put that on my business cards now because it's going to be Seth Merrow. Cause why not? I like that.
Well, I've already vamped a couple of times this morning while waiting for Pat McKenna and this and that. So I thought rather than just vamp it to the end of the show, people want a Seth Merrow play for Wednesday. It's not a Wednesday if Seth isn't betting with us.
I will say I was down there on Monday. It was a nice turnout. It was a nice event and a lot of folks from around the state, different industries supporting the racing game. It was nice to see. I got a little piece that folks didn't, you know, follow up, put a little piece together for my show on Saturday. Talked to a bunch of the people that were there. But plays, well, the finale at Gulfstream today, Daisy B at 8-1. Tossed in a little bit of a clunker, laid off from the end, you know, October until February. The comebacker was, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great. And I think people shy away a little bit. But I think this horse is better than that. The buyer number on the comebacker was okay. Now, like I say, it was just, these days, that was a short layup, but I think the horse is better than that. So in the finale, I have it 8, 6, 7, and 9. I'm going to use Daisy B on top. And again, we're looking at 8-1. On the morning line, and just quickly also go to race 5 at Gulfstream, fifth race at Gulfstream. I'm going to use the number 2, Social Engagement. Irod Ortiz is on board, so I'm a little leery whether we'll get the 5-1, but I thought the Brendan Walsh horse was coming in kind of a good progression of buyers over the past few starts, might have the horse primed for a better effort this afternoon. And again, Irod hops on board, but as I say, I don't know whether that'll help our price. So in the 5th, I have a 2, 8, 6, and 5. We'll put Social Engagement on top.
Excellent. What else? One more. Give us one.
In the 3rd at Gulfstream, let me just turn my pages. I'm only working one hand here. I have House Builder on top. Third race, we're on the synthetic, 16 claimers. House Builder's getting some class relief, 5-1 on the morning line. Had a nice little workout before the last race and ran okay, beaten six, but only a couple of lengths, but it was against better. I think the class relief is going to be a bonus for this horse, and maybe we move through again. Third race off, again, a short layoff these days of a couple of months, but it was a little bit of a layoff, and the drop, I think, is going to be, as I say, beneficial. So House Builder in the third. I have it 7-2, 5-3.
All right. So some action from Sapped at Gulfstream, the 7, House Builder in the third, 138 post, and then in the fifth, the 2, Social Engagement, and in the 8th, the 8, at 8-1. The triple eights, very lucky triple eights.
Nice. I like that. I hadn't seen that, but that's what we like.
The 8 in the 8th at 8-1 with Rusty Arnold.
Oh, by the way, before we hang up, another great job out at Vegas. Good work there.
Thank you.
I know on Twitter you were getting a lot of thumbs up. Deserve it. I texted a picture. I was sitting in doing TV myself, but I had you guys in the background. I was listening to a lot of it during the afternoon when I got home as well. It's always a lot of fun. You, the biggest horse players in the country sit down and kind of discuss strategy and whatnot. It's always a lot of fun. Good job.
I appreciate that. It's fun for me. It's... And it's, you know, it's amazing to me, and you can appreciate this because you do, you know, 4-hour, 5-hour shifts some days. It's 6 hours on Saturday, 6 on Sunday, and you know, the 2 shows on Friday. But it just flows by. I look up and you know, it's amazing.
And it was nice. You mentioned it. They made a good move, kind of compressing that time on Sunday between the semifinal and the final table. That was a good move.
Yeah, that used to be that. There used to be an hour and a half or something, and it was too much. Seth, I appreciate it. Sorry about the short segment, but short segment, long prices.
Yeah, quality over quantity.
I love it. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter. And you can look forward to Seth and I being your paddock hosts for a preview show at Gulfstream Florida Derby Day. It's going to be huge. It's a Fusillo.
Can't wait.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Let me wrap it up, send you out into the race day. And thanks to Seth and Tim Lawson from Woodbine, Andy Serling, and Pat McKenna from Naira, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and Lisa Lazarus from HISA. Down the road we go. Good to be back. Good to be back home for 2 more days before we go to OBS. Good luck today. Back with you tomorrow, big Thursday show, and replay 6-9 here on SiriusXM. Later, podcast and archive. All right? Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.